Hello, you are welcome Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from my home in Arlington, Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C. I am Shaka Sali, and today we'll discuss the challenges of achieving peace in South Sudan. Joining me from Washington, D.C. is my colleague John Tanza, host and managing editor of VOA's South Sudan in Focus, a daily radio program. I have to say, John, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
The feeling is mutual, Ndugu Shaka.
Joining me also are two distinguished guests, Ambassador Gordon Bwai, the Deputy Head of Mission at the South Sudan Embassy in Washington, D.C., and Suba Samuel Manasseh, a spokesman of the Rebel National Salvation Front, who joins us from somewhere in East Africa. I have to say, Ambassador Bwai and Manasseh, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much for welcoming us.
You're most welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sadia. It's my pleasure to be here.
I think this is the first time that we are interacting on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa, isn't it?
Correct, yes. The new world order of Corona.
It's really a pleasure. Let me talk to, of course, my colleague John Tanza before I come to you. John, we are obviously talking about something that is very near and dear to your heart. The situation, of course, in the Republic of South Sudan. Give us, if you will, a sort of report card since the deal was signed back in 2018 between the government in Juba and the rebel SPLA in opposition and others.
Thank you, Ndugu Shaka. I have to say that after the Sudanese government and various opposition groups signed the 2018 revitalized peace deal in Khartoum under what observers termed as pressure from the former Sudanese president Omar al-Bashir, a lot has happened, negative and positive. Let's start with the positive one, that the rebels of the SPLM-IO came to Juba, the members of the opposition alliance known as SOA came to Juba and discussed on how they can move forward. A government of national unity was formed. State governments were formed. And that is on the positive side. But on the negative side is that the deal required that Juba, Wau, Malakal should be under the supervision and protection of a unified force composed of all the parties that signed the agreement. That unified force is still in training camps. Some fighters have deserted from the unified camps because there is no food, there is no medical care, and the situation in the camps are just are horrible. Our reporter went with the African Union delegation to visit a training camp outside Juba town, in a place called Rajaf. That camp was supposed to have thousands of troops, but the number there was our reporter saw a dwindling number and spoke to the commander of the training camp, and he said, if I don't have food to give to these people, I cannot stop them from running away. If I don't have medicine, I cannot stop them from deserting the camp.
What is the problem? What seems to be the problem, John?
The problem here is this, that the camps have not been supplied with the necessary basic needs. For instance, if you put 2,000 people in one place, you need to have a clinic. You need to have a constant supply of food. You need to give them uniform. When I saw pictures of the trainers, some of them are bare feet. Some of them are in their own clothes. And it's just a situation where the government is saying everything is okay. We are going to supply them with uniform. When I spoke to Barnaba Benjamin Marial, who is the government mediator with the holdouts groups, he said Uganda and Sudan promised to give uniform to the soldiers, and soon they will be graduated, but we are still waiting to see that happen. The other sad story is that the main supply route in South Sudan, linking South Sudan and East Africa, is having a lot of security problems. It's an open secret that truck drivers from Uganda have refused to go to Juba. It's 1 week now. They are camped at Elegu, saying if there is no guarantee of security on the Juba Nimule Road, Kaya Yei Road, they are not going to risk their lives. But these are the issues. And cattle raids, intercommunal fights are going on in Warab, Lake State. And so those are the news that I would say are not, you know, good coming out of South Sudan.
You know, Jordan, I was once a serviceman. I was, in fact, a lieutenant, and therefore I was an officer and a gentleman, paratrooper. You cannot possibly talk about an army without factoring in the quartermaster general, who should be responsible for the logistics, without which you really cannot define yourself as an army. So what is the problem, really?
The problem lies squarely on the shoulders of those who signed the peace agreement. I know that the government is blaming the rebels. The rebels are blaming the government. But the issue here is, if you sign an agreement, if me and you, Shaka, we agree that we are going to do A, B, C, D, we must stand up to our words. South Sudan gets $20 million U.S. dollars from oil revenues per month. If the government says they don't have money for feeding their own soldiers at the unified camps, then the question that begs an answer is, where is the $20 million going? When I interviewed the Minister of Petroleum, he said they get two cargoes of oil from the oil fields every month. One cargo goes for paying Khartoum, and the other cargo goes for road construction.
Let me ask you this question, John. I do not know anybody that has been covering the situation back in the Republic of South Sudan like John Tanza, my colleague. I am sure you have interacted with a lot of people on the ground. What do you hear from the ground? What is the voice saying from the ground in as far as the 2018 peace deal is concerned?
I will start with the recent message from two church leaders, respected church leaders from the Anglican Church and the Catholic Church in Central Equatorial State. The Catholic Bishop of Yei Diocese, Bishop Ercolano Lado, a man I respect for his words, spoke very clear. He said, the peace agreement that was signed in 2018 has not reached Yei. You talked about people being displaced from their villages. Their properties are ferried on military trucks into Yei town. Goats, mattresses, iron sheets, doors, windows. These military trucks belong to the South Sudan government. The retired bishop of the Anglican Church, Bishop Hilary Luate Adeba, a man I also respect for his role in the church, is hosting hundreds of displaced people. These displaced people spoke to our reporter in Yei and they told us they are running away from fighting between government forces and rebels of the National Salvation Front. When I interviewed Suba last week, he told me that his group does not target civilians. But I told him, bullets don't discriminate. Whether you're a civilian or a military, once a bullet is fired, it does not know who is there. And when we spoke to the military spokesperson in Juba, the South Sudan People's Defense Force military spokesperson, he said the government troops are not targeting civilians. The question that begs an answer is, why are these civilians leaving their villages if NAS and the government are respecting humanitarian laws? Why are these people running? I don't think I will run from Washington to another place if nobody is chasing me.
Who do you think should be held responsible here?
Both parties. The rebels of the National Salvation Front signed a cessation of hostility with the government of South Sudan. But the reality is this. The people in South Sudan are suffering. They need peace. People who speak to us say they are better off. They say when Sudan was unified, those things were not happening. The South Sudan armies were not attacking civilians. They respected civilians. But we have in South Sudan today, most of our people who spoke to us are saying it is circus and disappointment.
What about some who would say that peace and stability actually means the presence of social, economic, political justice for all the people of South Sudan?
My experience covering South Sudan at VOA for 10 years speaks the contrary, because the stories that we cover, people complain about impunity, people complain about corruption, people complain about nepotism, people complain about incompetencies in the government institutions. Now, if you talk about social justice and equality for all, I cannot judge the government's performance, but the people who speak to us tell us that what they see in South Sudan is not what they hope should have been there.
On that note, my colleague John Tanza, thank you so much for your insight. And I say this from the deepest, the better part of the bottom of my Kavari heart and soul.
It's my pleasure to be on this show, and I wish you all the best with the two panelists.
You're most welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Now let's go to Ambassador Gordon Bwai. Ambassador, were you able to listen to the comments by our colleague John Tanza?
I listened to all of it, yes.
I see. What is your reaction? What is the reason why the 2018 peace deal seems, at least to many, not to be working?
First of all, Shaka, thank you very much for inviting me to this event, this program today.
You're most welcome.
If we are talking about whether the 2018 peace agreement is being implemented or not, I wouldn't be talking anywhere with somebody from National Salvation Front, which is not a party to the agreement. The parties that signed the 2018 peace agreement are in Juba implementing the peace, and there is nothing wrong with it. I think we should not mix eggs with oranges, simply because the National Salvation Front is not a party to the 2018 peace agreement. That's why we are talking to them in Rome through the Senengidio process. So if you and I, if you are asking me about whether the 2018 peace agreement is being implemented or not, I think you should have brought in people from SPLM-IO and other parties that are now implementing the peace, not the National Salvation Front member, who is not a signatory to the peace, because we have a different process with them. coming to answer your question, the 2018 peace agreement is being implemented. You can see, and I was surprised with the comments of John Tanza saying that the people, there are individuals in South Sudan preparing to be under Islamic regime rather than being independent in their home country, like the freedom they're enjoying now as independent country. To me, those who are saying that are just, it is a political blasphemy to the people of South Sudan. It is an insult to the dignity and to the spirit of 3 million people who died for freedom. For somebody to say, because today we are experiencing a civil war, which is ending now, and then people would prefer to live under a colony of Islamic system. I don't think that one, those who told John Tanza such a thing are really, they could be only one fraction of a South Sudan population, but the majority of people of South Sudan are very happy that they have independence, and they thank President Salva Kiir, because before you were analogizing Moses with Joshua and all these. Of course, Salva Kiir brought the independence of South Sudan. Without his leadership, that led South Sudanese to unite to reach 2011, I think we would still be in trouble by now without achieving our independence. So we have to appreciate him for the role he played for South Sudan to become an independent state. What happened in 2013, the war was imposed by some individuals who were looking for power. And everybody knows that very well, that what happened in 2013 was not a creation of President Salva Kiir. It was just individual people who rejected a democratic process within the SPLM. They created that war. It should not be blamed on President Salva Kiir, Mayadin. President Salva Kiir has done his part. He brought the independence of the people of South Sudan. And the history will remember him for that, and he should be congratulated and thanked for that. In a state for people to say, oh, you know, the whole thing about independence, South Sudanese should not appreciate themselves for being independent. That one is a political blasphemy to me, those who can say that. They have freedom, too, to migrate to North Sudan if they don't feel that they have a country that they call their own and they are proud of that. So now you have to tell me, if I'm here to talk with the spokesman of National Salvation Front, then let us talk about the terrorist activities being conducted by the National Salvation Front. They killed the Ugandan and Kenyan traders along Juba Numle Road, along Juba Yei Road. They are killing the very people. And now Mr. Samuel Suba is in Kampala. Alfred Lukuji, who is the deputy of Thomas Sirleaf, is in Arua, in, you know, Arua town. So if the same NAS leadership that are living in Uganda are ordering their forces to kill Ugandan traders, I believe the countries in the Horn of Africa, the East Africa community, including the Ugandan government, will ask them. Because if they are now engaging in killing traders, civilians, just for the sake of killing anybody, like what was being done by some negative forces in Arab countries, I think the Ugandan government would also ask them why they're targeting the Ugandan citizens. Because that is a terrorist activity. And also, it is a violation of the Rome Declaration on Peace. We signed the ceasefire with the Soma group, in which the NAS is part of, in January 2020. And that peace agreement states very clearly that a ceasefire should be observed. Now, with the attacks of last week, then it means the NAS is not observing the ceasefire. Second to that, up to now, Thomas Sirleaf refused to nominate two of his NAS members to be part of ceasefire and transitional security arrangement mechanism, whereby when they are members, then the peace should be monitored.
Ambassador Gordon, why, with due respect to some of your comments, and we'll attempt to address some of them a little bit later, let me ask you this question, if you don't mind. You heard, for example, that some church leaders from the Central Equatorial State are on record talking about how that peace accord of 2018 is not being experienced in their state.
How do you in Ye, that? It's not the state. Look, Ye is the town. It's not. Central Equatoria is very huge. In Ye, because of National Salvation Front terrorist activities of killing people. Right now, you cannot move from Juba to Ye without military escort, because there are forces of National Salvation Front that will attack you, whether you are a civilian, whether you are a Catholic bishop, even Pope Francis himself will be attacked by NAS if he attempts to go to Ye.
So that is a problem. Why NAS is not observing the ceasefire while they are engaging in terrorist activities? Why should they not respect the Rome Declaration on ceasefire? So let Mr. Samuel Suba answer. If not, maybe President Museveni will ask them, because they are living in Uganda and they are now killing Ugandans.
Very interesting. I thought the last time I checked that Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni was your ally.
He is our ally up to now. I'm not saying that he's not an ally. Even the very reason why Mr. Samuel Suba in Kampala is because of the peace in Rome. The Ugandan government accepts and appreciate the government of South Sudan to negotiate with the whole out groups, including NAS, because we want to bring a comprehensive peace. So therefore, there's no point for Uganda to say that they should not live in Uganda, because it's another way of facilitating the peace. But if they become a terrorist organization targeting the citizen of the East Africa community, killing them along the roads, including Ugandans, I think there will be a review of the policy of how we look at NAS as a movement. If they are a movement that do not want to be a peace partner, then something else will be done. But for time being, our government cannot declare NAS as a terrorist organization, simply because if you declare them as a terrorist organization, then you cannot negotiate with a terrorist organization. We want to make things open for peace. We want to include everybody in the peace process. That's why we are talking to them through the process of Senengidio. But if they become a terrorist organization like what ISIS is doing, I believe the Ugandan government will join in with South Sudan government to deal with them.
Suba Manasseh, first of all, any specific reason, any particular reason why you are not signatory to the 2018 peace deal?
Thank you, Sir Kasale, for hosting me here for the first time, for your global audience to understand exactly what is ailing this country called Republic of South Sudan. And you have asked a good question in the beginning when you said, what exactly is wrong in the Republic of South Sudan? What is wrong in South Sudan is a question of leadership represented by the Salva Kiir and his representative now, the current one speaking in the U.S. You can see how undiplomatic he is and is representing that country. And therefore, you can see why problem cannot arise if this is the kind of diplomats we have representing us. It is a shame to have such leaders who does not know how to address, how to represent a country, how to speak on behalf of their people, and how to present reality such that the whole people understand what is going on. That's one. Two, shocker. This agreement called ISIS from beginning was born premature and dead. And that's why we refuse to be part of it. Why? Because the agreement was actually to address external concerns. The agreement was actually a project of President Bashir. Bashir knew very well that his government is facing serious economic challenges in which the population will rise against his government. And therefore, he wants to benefit from the oil of the South by pacifying South Sudan such that the oil will flow. It doesn't have any relation with the peace process in South Sudan. Therefore, unfortunately, events in North went faster and Bashir was removed. And for that matter, being a foster father of this agreement, the agreement now is in limbo and it's not being implemented. Nothing is working there, Shaka. This diplomat is actually lying to the whole world. In fact, lying in the government of Salva Kiir is one of their diplomatic practice. All this time, what we have now in that country, there's no country, in fact. There's no country. The government is not able to pay theirs. Even, I think he will testify. If not, he has not even been paid for 6 months. I don't know how he's living in the United States there. So there's nothing. That is him. Now, what about the soldiers? What about the soldiers who are getting less than $10? Who are getting less than $10? Because a soldier, for instance, his salary is almost 1,200 Sudanese pounds, which is more or less $5. Now, and this is a person with a gun. What will you expect from this person? He will definitely misbehave. Second, this agreement has fallen short of addressing the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan. This agreement was purposely signed to maintain the status quo for the people, for this particular government, which has a tendency
of establishing a monolithic tribal chauvinism in South Sudan against the vast of the people in throughout. South Sudan, first of all, is a heterogeneous nation. A heterogeneous nation, therefore, needs a system that combines, that binds all these nationalities together such that they will enjoy the dividends of the peace. But the government of Salva Kiir and his somewhere, they're only focusing on their own, the political elite or the gun class to manage, loot the resources of the country. And that's the only thing that they have. Now they're using this agreement to strengthen them. And therefore, that to continue with the looting, to continue with the destabilizing of the people, when in that myopic agenda, narrow agenda of ethnic nationalism. So for that matter, whatever has been agreed in Khartoum, in this ISIS, the so-called ISIS, none of it is implemented. The agreement is not about formation of a government, formation of being a cabinet and a state government. And what is, there are core fundamental issues. For instance, issues of security reforms. And this is an area where they have blatantly failed. The people who have been in cantonment, they have all deserted with all their guns. And these are the very people now who are causing havoc in the roads in Central Equatorial State. Currently, as we speak, there are thousands of cattle from Jungule who have almost invaded the whole of Central Equatorial State. Most of these pastoralists are well armed. Even their equipments are more powerful than the one of the government soldiers. So these people are being supported by the same government in Juba to cause havoc, to displace people, to occupy people's land, to feed on people's crop, to displace people into refugees. This is actually what these people are doing, and is a part of their agenda to create this monolithic chauvinism that they have been doing on there. So part of these people are the ones causing chaos. You have heard of unknown gunmen in Juba who are terrorizing people, who are killing journalists in Juba. These are part of the same people who are now going to the roads, because so in Juba there are no money now. So but money is with others.
I'm sorry to interject here, but I hope that you will find some space in your beautiful South Sudanese heart to forgive me for that. But Manasi, what about the apparent facts that reports from Uganda seem to corroborate accusations from Ambassador Gordon Bwai that, for example, your troops have been in fact attacking Ugandan commercial and non-commercial vehicles traveling to South Sudan through Nimule and Kaya?
It is not true. It is this statement from the government of the Republic of South Sudan and from individuals like Boy who are sending wrong reports to these neighbors of ours, accusing us, because they just need a simple sympathy from the failed system that they have in there. They're not able to provide security to the people of South Sudan. They're not able to provide security to the motorists. They are not able to provide security in the whole towns of the Republic of South Sudan. And this issue of insecurity is not only limited to these roads in eastern Equatoria. Even the whole governor was attacked 2 weeks ago with his well-armed convoys by militias. Those are tribal people in Warap, fighting also going on there. So everywhere, all these chaos are happening. Even in the areas where National Salvation Fronts are not even operating, now what will they say? What kind of terrorists are those who are doing those activities there? But what we know is that the disgruntled groups within the SSPDF are the very people who are doing all these attacks. Since last year, usually when they attack our bases and we counter them, they usually turn their wrath on the civilians. They have done it in Lanya on March last year, and now this year they did it in Yei, in the areas of Lasso and Umbachi. And the results of this was what happened now in the roads in Central Equatoria between Kaya and Yei, and also between Yei and Juba, and also in Numure Road. So these accusations are baseless. We condemn it, and we know very well that these are SSPDF with their allied militia, tribal militia, that are marooting in Central Equatoria, who are doing all this chaos.
We'll go for a break, and when we come back, we shall continue with the discussion, so please, don't go away.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation, and more than that, we're building a community of inclusion and empowerment.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
We are here at Kalerwe Market in Uganda, Kampala, where in this whole market, women are crying out for their situations to change.
For women, it will be better for us.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
Our kids are raped every single day.
This movement got the governments to listen. It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say, enough is enough.
It's not necessary anymore to climb on a car. I can be in any place to cheer with the people.
You are welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, and we are talking about challenges of achieving peace in South Sudan. My guests are Suba Samuel Manasseh, a spokesman for the National Salvation Front, and Ambassador Gordon Mbwai, the deputy head of mission at the Embassy of South Sudan here in Washington, D.C. Ambassador Mbwai.
Yes. Yeah, I'm hearing you.
What do you think needs to be done from your vantage point to reassure the people of South Sudan that you are open for business and that you are in a position where you will carry out exactly what governments are supposed to do, which is providing security for its people and property?
You know, Shaka, you said earlier that you were a paratrooper, and as a soldier, you know very well that if there is an organized armed group that does not want peace, then the government may not have an option but to resort to the use of force. For us, when we accepted, our government, our president accepted to negotiate with all our groups, like those of NAS under the umbrella of SOMA in Rome through the process of sending video, was to bring a comprehensive peace in the country. Contrary to what Mr. Samuel said, when you look at Yei, there are no tribal militias in Yei. And he has to be honest with facts. The reason why NAS is attacking civilian cars is the strategy of trying to suffocate businesses so that Juba will not get business. All the goods that are coming through Uganda. You know very well, Shaka, that the highway to Numuli and to Uganda is the lifeline of South Sudan because we are a landlocked country. Mm. For them, they think that cutting it off, this road, by killing the Ugandan, killing the Kenyans, so that they don't take goods to Juba, then the government will collapse. That is the assumption they are making, contrary to the peace agreement they signed. Mr. Samuel Suba should tell you up to now why NAS or the chairman of NAS, General Thomas Cirillo, did not nominate two individuals who were supposed to be part of the ceasefire and transitional security arrangement mechanism so that the peace should be, the ceasefire violation should be monitored. Because there is a mechanism that is observing whether the ceasefire that is signed is being monitored or not. I think you read the UN reports last week. The UN said that most of the violence in South Sudan is not being done by the armed groups that signed the peace agreement. This is what David Shearer said. It's only the militias who are fighting a non-political war. Now, NAS is outside the peace agreement. So if to bring NAS into the peace agreement, the first thing is the implementation of the ceasefire. Because when there are no attacks along Juba-Numuli Road, along the road cars going to Uganda, and then you will not have instability along Yei Road, simply because the NAS forces will be contained. But Mr. Thomas Cirillo, who is being represented by Mr. Samuel here, they don't
abide by the ceasefire agreement that was signed in Rome. They are still, you can even see the way he's talking, he did not even make any reference to Rome Declaration because they believe they want to continue fighting. That's why they did not nominate two individuals to be part of the ceasefire mechanism. If there is a violation, you know very well, if the ceasefire is violated, then the mechanism that is supposed to monitor the violation should go to the ground. Now, it did last week. The UN and the IGAD, they went there and they confirmed that the killing was done by NAS soldiers because there are no tribal militias in Ye except NAS. If you want to talk about tribal cattle wrestling in other parts of South Sudan, that one is non-political issue. It can be addressed as a communal violence. And this is not what we are talking about here, because the man who is talking to me is somebody who took up arms for political reasons to fight the government. Now, you ask him why NAS rejected the Rome Declaration. If there is no Rome political peace process, it means that the government will continue fighting the NAS. But we have not launched an attack despite this, the killing of a civilian last week, because we still abide by the ceasefire that was signed by us and them in Rome. Can Mr. Samuel Suba tell us why they are rejecting the peace? Why they are rejecting the ceasefire? That is the question. First, let us have a ceasefire, and then we talk about the root causes of the conflict. That's why there is ongoing peace process. We are talking to them. We do not reject to talk to them. But you cannot talk to somebody killing civilian, conducting terrorist activities. So someone should tell us why they are not abiding by the ceasefire. Where are the two individuals to be part of the mechanism to observe the ceasefire? That is the issue. And instead for him to just talk negative, I cannot attack him personally because he's the peace partner, like with the way he was talking, calling me, we are liars and all these things. That is not the issue here. The issue is that let them not think they will topple the government. All the 98% of the opposition that took up arms in 2013, they are now in Juba. The first vice president, Riek Machar. So let them forget thinking that they will topple the government. Let them accept the peace, and we are ready for that. That's why we are talking to them in Rome.
Mr. Ambassador, do you still maintain that the National Salvation Front is operating from Uganda?
I'm saying Mr. Samuel Suba is in Kampala. The deputy of Thomas Cirillo, Alfred Lokuju, is in Arua. Of course, they have the forces are in South Sudan, but the political elements are in Uganda. And they are living in Uganda. And I believe the Ugandan government will ask them that you cannot live in our country while you are killing our traders.
But as we said, the last time I checked, there is all the evidence that the leadership in Uganda is an ally of the SPLM, of which, of course, you are a member. And at the same time, we do have reports from Uganda, emanating from Uganda, accusing the National Salvation Front forces for attacking Ugandan commercial and non-commercial vehicles traveling from Uganda to South Sudan. How is that possible? How could they possibly support the National Salvation Front and at the same time are accusing them for undermining their business activities?
To answer your question, Shaka,
yes, please.
I said earlier that Ugandan government is not moral or materially supporting the NAS. But Ugandan government, because we, the government of South Sudan, are negotiating peace with NAS in Rome, they allow NAS leaders, including Samuel Suba, to stay in Uganda in the name of peace. We have not declared NAS as a terrorist organization. Once we declare NAS as a terrorist organization, then they will not live in Uganda. We are a member of East Africa Community, and we have a security agreement with East Africa Community countries.
Right.
But if we are in peace, even you remember during before we signed peace with SPLM, SPLIO, they had representative in Uganda. You know that. They used to go and meet even President Museveni.
Right.
It was part of a public diplomacy because Uganda, too, had to convince them to accept the peace. It is in the interest of Ugandan national interest that there is peace in South Sudan, because when your neighbor is at war, it will also affect you. We share the same communities. But if NAS refuse peace completely, including rejecting the ceasefire, and they are killing Ugandans, Kenyan traders along the road, then the East Africa community leadership will review the security. They had a meeting last month. So this thing will be reviewed by the top leadership and said, okay, what do we do with NAS? Since NAS has become a terrorist organization. But we did not declare them as a terrorist organization. What we are telling them, let them accept the ceasefire. Let them accept the peace. Let them not kill citizens. Because I believe, I'm telling you, they can kill Pope Francis if he attempts to go to Ye with his convoy. They will kill the Pope. I'm telling you this.
I see. Now, Mr. Manasseh, first of all, you talked about how, in your view, the 2018 peace deal did not address fully what you characterized as the fundamental root causes of the problem in your country. What would you say is, in fact, the fundamental root causes of the problem in your country?
Thank you, Thakasale, for the second time. But before that, there are two things that I want to educate my brother here so that he understands well. There is a difference between cessation of hostilities and ceasefire. What we had with the, what we assigned with the government of the Republic of South Sudan is a COHA, which is cessation of hostilities in 2017, and we recommitted it in January 2020. That is cessation of hostilities. Ceasefire is completely a different process. These are technical terms. Let him understand that. So we have not reached the stage of signing a ceasefire. This is what, boy, you must put into cognitive, that there is no ceasefire is out of context at this particular time. Number two, the process of NAS joining or SOMA joining.
I frankly do not know anybody that has covered the story of Southern Sudan more than you. You interact a lot of people 24/7. From what you gather in interacting with your compatriots back home, in the diaspora and other players, what do you think, based on what they say, should be the way forward?
Based on my conversations with a lot of people in South Sudan and in the diaspora, everybody is concerned about peace. Everybody is concerned about reconciliation. People are saying, we are all South Sudanese. It is high time for us to sit on the table to address issues that are close to our hearts. Let me give you an example, Shaka Saleh. Right now in South Sudan, in central Equatoria specifically, land grabbing around Juba Town is a potential source of another serious conflict in South Sudan. The indigenous community of Juba Town, that is the Bari community, are not happy because their villages are being grabbed and renamed. For instance, how would you feel if Kabale, your hometown, is grabbed and renamed? This is what is happening in central Equatoria. And if you speak to the politicians, all they are saying is, we are implementing the peace. It has taken them almost going to 3 years implementing the 2018 peace agreement, and the people who are supposed to get the dividends of the peace are saying they are not seeing it. I know Ambassador Boy would want to put a positive spin on the situation in the country, but the people who speak to us are the ones who are feeling the heat on the ground.
What about you, Ambassador Gordon Boy? What do you think that needed to be done, that hasn't perhaps been done, in order for the people of your country to enjoy what they have struggled for decades, which is freedom. And now, you have been free for about 10 years. And yet, a lot of people are saying there is no freedom.
Shaka, look, I don't know. You put a lot of things there. When you say, because what is we are doing now is implementation of the peace agreement. There are two processes that are on the table in South Sudan. One is the implementation of 2018 peace. The other is the negotiation with the all-out groups, including NAS, to join the peace process. Because if these people are outside the peace implementation, the comprehensive peace, then you will have an incident like what happened last week. Because even if you leave 2,000 or 100 people outside the peace, they will also disturb the peace.
Ambassador Boy, you said last week, what do you mean exactly?
I mean about the killing along Juba Nomale Yei Road, all the killings that are happening. That's what I meant.
Okay.
Yes, because the NAS, the all-out groups are forces. And those forces, they have to be part of the peace agreement for us to have peace at certain National Salvation Front. The National Salvation Front. Yes, to be included in the peace process that was signed. Because they are not signatory to the revitalized peace agreement, but if we reach a peace with them, it will be an annex, a separate peace that will also be implemented by the peace partners that are in Juba. We already, as you know, we are implementing the peace that was signed in 2018. That's why the national government, all the state government, all the national government have been formed, and within 10 days, the national parliament will also be formed by the parties that signed the 2018 peace agreement. Now, you need another factor of those of Soma that we are negotiating with in Rome to join the peace. Then now, as John was saying, that the cantonment are abandoned, I would say no, the cantonment are not abandoned. Do we have economic challenges? Yes. The corona situation created and affected the oil price, as everybody knows that. But it's still with the limited resources that we have. That's why we are now putting money. For example, the IMF gave South Sudan around $174 million last week. That one is very helpful. We are appealing to international community to help us. Even here in the U.S., they are struggling too. That's why they are borrowing a lot of money, because of the COVID. Now what we need is the help, like what the IMF is now doing, to support the government financially so that we go and implement. That piece has a lot of provisions for us to implement them. They need money, including justice, including all this. It needs a lot of money. And for the time being, we are trying our best with the little resources we have. And the peace agreement is going forward, the 2018 peace agreement. There is no complaint even from the peace partners. That's why they're in Juba. When it comes to the issue of National Salvation Front, it's a separate issue. That's why we are telling them, let us stick to Rome process so that we reach a political solution with the Soma that will also include them in the government as a new peace agreement for the implementation of the peace, so that all South Sudan armed groups are part and parcel of the national government. Nobody will go and say, I'm outside. Because when you create a unified army, you will also need the group of Soma to be part of the unified army. They cannot be left out. That's why we are talking to them. So the way forward is the implementation of the peace. The way forward is for the all-out group like National Salvation Front to join the peace. And also to stop, before my brother Samuel was saying, oh, what we sign is cessation of hostility. Let us not just change the English words. Cessation of hostility meaning that you don't attack. You have to stop all the hostilities. But when you attack, like what happened last week, the NAS forces were attacking civilian cars, that is not cessation of hostility. Let us stop attacks and then talk politics, like what is happening in the Rome process. That's why there is a Rome process to resolve the political issues that they raise. We are open to that. What we need is the implementation of the peace. Once the peace is implemented, there is no group that has its own army outside the national army, then slowly peace will return to South Sudan in a comprehensive way. That's what we are saying. That is the way forward. We cannot just say like what John Tanza is saying, that he talked to some people who lost hope. They see that, oh, South Sudan is finished, it's a failed country. No, that's not true. We are not the first country to experience a civil war. You have seen now, even in Ethiopia, they have issues. They have a problem in Tigray. But they have not given up Ethiopia because there's a problem in Tigray.
Let us see if we can bring back Mr. Manasseh. Mr. Manasseh, can you hear me?
I hear you clear. Sorry, my internet is so weak. I was on the verge of saying that, first of all, what Ambassador Boy here was alluding to are not true. He was just painting unsubstantiated things that cannot help us here in this discussion.
If you don't mind, Mr. Manasseh, why don't you sincerely, because we are running into a lot of unnecessary technical problems. Why don't you walk us through what you think the National Salvation Front needs to see happen so that you can come on board and be part of the process, so that together you can restore at least a semblance of peace and stability in your beautiful country of the Republic of South Sudan.
Shaka, when we talk about that issue of implementation of the agreement, which is us is going on, we need to tell you that, I have to be frank here, that there is no agreement under implementation. Unfortunately, we have leaders in South Sudan, including Boy, who believes in the power sharing, allocation of positions, and that exclusively they underline it as a implementation of a peace process. But peace means a lot. I agree with Tanza in the beginning when he was listing some of being justice, reconciliation, development, and the like. So as far as national salvation is concerned, we are saying for sustainable peace in South Sudan to occur, we need to, first of all, address the root causes of the problem in the country, which the current agreement has not looked at them. Saka, what we have in
which
South Sudan, that's what I'm going into. First of all, we have a problem of governance. We have a problem of governance in that country. People are not even asked, first of all, since 2005, when we had the CPA, and then we had the government of Southern Sudan at that level. The SPLM government did not take through the people of Southern Sudan then for a national conversation, because we are anticipating independence of the country, and therefore, how are we going to govern ourselves? So that country, first of all, needs a discussion that will reach to us to a logical conclusion on a type of a governance that we need in South Sudan. And therefore, any negotiation that we need to reach into must address the fundamental question of governance in that country. Two is the issue of security, Shaka Saleh. When you talk of security in that country, we don't have forces. We don't have government forces that protect the citizens, protect the lives and the properties of the citizens. What we have in that country, if I can read for you, conglomerations of militia groups. For instance, we have, how do you name the army in the tribal name of the president? For instance, we have Matianganyor. Who are these people? We have Duke Ben in the name of a tribe. Currently now, they have recruited new force now called Duke Duke. Imagine, this is forces, these are national, this is a government which is encouraging formation of militias, and these militias are the ones causing chaos in the country. Now, in the negotiation in Rome, Shaka, we're engaging the government delegation that it's very, very important for us to, first of all, establish new security sector in South Sudan. A new security sector in South Sudan that will represent all the ethnic diversities in the country. Forces that are professional, forces that are well trained, that can deliver security services to the people of South Sudan. The government is refusing this aspect, Shaka. And we look at the issue of security establishment, new security sector establishment, as a cardinal for stabilizing that particular country. Shaka, we also have a very serious issues to do with corruption in that country. And this agreement that they are talking about, and they are talking of lack of money, what What is the hell are they talking about while they're scooping a lot of money from the oil revenues? And they are diverting this money for their personal use instead of investing them in the establishment of or implementing of security reforms that they have agreed there. But, of course, there is no political will, and, of course, they wanted an agreement that restores the status quo. Now, all these things are all static. I can go ahead, especially reforms in the civil service, which is also very important, and, of course, building of economy of the country, economy that will be able to deliver, that can raise enough revenue and deliver services to the people of South Sudan. Those are the issues that we need to talk about. And now the most fundamental issue is the issue of the constitutional making process, because up to now, we don't have a permanent constitution that will guide, of course, as a sovereign document, that will guide the people of South Sudan and a major decision, with the exception of these degrees that the President Salva Kiir usually have to make it. Now, when they come to this agreement that they are talking about, that even Riek Machar is in Juba, I will even say that is, he is in prison. He is in prison. This is a person who cannot speak. This is a person who cannot travel, who cannot go to his constituency. Now,
you don't mean a prison like Ruzira. Are you talking about conditions that are akin to a pleasant prison, perhaps?
Exactly. He is under house arrest, because if you cannot talk to your people, if you cannot visit your troops in cantonment, if you cannot talk to the people, you cannot even have an audience with media people. What do you call about this? And you call him a first vice president and a peace partner? This is the situation which is there. So we are seeing the failure. We are seeing the failure of this agreement. And there we are telling the government to put a lot of efforts in the current negotiation that we have in Rome, such that we can visibly see the political will that they have, that at least we can agree with them. But up to now, Saka, we are not seeing anything. All we see is deception, intransigency, and confusion here and there. So this is the current situation that we have in that country, Saka.
Thank you so much. Ambassador Bai, on a softer note and conclusion, really, what is your relationship with the Joe Biden administration?
Well, the Joe Biden administration and South Sudan relationship is still a cordial relationship like what we had before President Trump was elected. The same people who came with President Biden were the very people who work for the independence of South Sudan. As you know, President Biden, when he was the vice president, he went to Nairobi and many times met President Salva Kiir during the eve of leading to South Sudan independence. So the new administration are composed of people who know South Sudan very well. People like Susan Rice, you know them, the way they participated in the creation of South Sudan. There's also John Kerry, who's an envoy. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who was the former Assistant Secretary of State, now she's ambassador to the UN. So the current administration, we will feel that there are people who are attached to South Sudan, some of them personally. They have a personal attachment to South Sudan. So our relationship with them is the relationship between brothers and sisters, because they help us to become independent.
Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, South Sudan. And please, please remember to keep the African hopes alive.